¿Qué pasó, gente? It's your boy Steve Garcia, and you're tuned in to another episode of Guns in America, brought to you by Chocast. And we are living in some crazy times, man. I don't even know what to say, man. It's just like this. It's like this new day. It's like this new day of toilet paper, and more toilet paper. Toilet paper is in the news, man. For real, there is mass amounts of people running to the store and fighting and taking huge masses amounts of toilet paper. I mean, by the truckloads. It's crazy. And I shouldn't even be making fun of it, but this coronavirus has got everybody on tilt, man. This coronavirus has got everybody just crazy fucked up. And I just wanted to, talk a little bit about, the media, man. It has a big part in that. Yes, we should be worried about this thing, but I mean, should we be acting this way? I don't think so. I think it is something that we should be worried about. I do. I'm not, trying to poke fun at everybody, but it is a couple of laughs. Everybody's, going out there acting like fools, with the toilet paper. And I mean, in realistic mathematics, it's probably not going to affect, the average person. You have to look at that, from a statistical standpoint. And I'm not trying to be a nerd, but nor here nor there, man. I think it is a tool from the media. I'm not sure quite how it got here. I would love to know that. I don't think it's a natural occurrence. Significantly enough, it is coincidental. The time frame, and I don't know, man. It's definitely something that, seems like some type of attack, and I'm not sure by whom, would do something like this. And I think that's why it's important that we have strong leadership. We need somebody that can handle difficult times like this, make the right decisions during difficult times like this, discern many different aspects of the crazy world that we live in today, and not just be so, self-centered or into your own minds and into your own thoughts. I forgot there's a, what is that, there's a word that describes, I think, the mindset of our current Mr. Trump. And he's definitely somebody that would never capitulate, even in defeat, if he doesn't know something, he has this theory that he knows like everything, and solipsism, that's what it is. It's just this, idea that his mind is the only one that exists, and nobody else's thoughts, nothing outside of his mind, is really what he is thinking about. He doesn't externalize the world in other people's minds. He basically just thinks about his own thoughts, and that's it. And if you have pain, if somebody else has pain, if somebody else is hurt, since you can't really think it, because it's not in your mind, it really doesn't exist. You may understand the same pain, and you may understand that same traumatic experience, or what it feels like, you know, in your own mind for you, but you can't do it in other people's minds. It's almost like you have this arrogant view, like whatever the opposite of being altruistic. You know, he's totally, in my opinion, the opposite of that. And not, this isn't a beat up Trump episode, but I think that, you know, we should think. We should allow our minds to just think about, you know, human behavior. And it's pretty obvious that, you know, you can pick up on somebody's personality just through sometimes body language and, you know, the tonality of their voice or just the things that they do. Again, you know, we live in a very prosperous country. We live in, it's said that we live in the richest country in the world, you know, and most people wouldn't know that. I don't know that. I don't have all the things that you know, people that I guess make $1 million or $1 billion or $1 trillion, because, you know, we have a lot of millionaires and we have a lot of billionaires and we have a lot of trillionaires. But hell, we have more of those than anybody in the country. But I think that the way that everything is set up, it is set up for a few people to win, you know, and that's it. And I think that's why we're having issues like what we're seeing right now, is because there were systems in place for something like this not to happen. However, I think that if you really, like, think about the chain of events that put us here, if Trump had not been elected, let's just say, for instance, for example, and I'm not saying that I'm a Hillary fan, okay? That's not what I'm saying. And I'm not saying that I'm not a Hillary fan. I'm just saying that let's just pretend for a moment that she had won the election and he had lost the election, okay? Or let's just say that Obama was still in office. Let's just say that it would have been pretty much not Trump. Okay, let's just say that everything was going to stay the same or change in a different direction. The presidency would have went to Hillary, I think, if my memory serves me correct. For all you Hillary haters, don't throw rocks at me for this one. But I'm pretty sure she wouldn't have shut down the CDC. And in all the years in office that Obama was in office, I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have shut down the CDC either. I don't even like Biden. I would say that it's probable that he wouldn't shut down the CDC. I think that most of the programs that we have in place are there for a reason. They're there to take care of, I mean, we have 333 million people, give or take. You have to have certain forms of social programs, you know, like, I don't understand the people that don't get what our society needs as a local level, on a city level, on a state and government level. You need hospitals, you need polices, you know, you need policemen, you need firemen, you need public schools. You do need free education. You do need an infrastructure That is if you want a prosperous country. I mean, if you want a country that has a whole bunch of, you know, ignorant thieves running around looking how to, you know, break in somebody's house and steal something or go to prison because they don't know how to fend for themselves in an educated level, then yes, you don't have free public education. Those are requirements of the country. And maybe our country does like being the number one for locking individuals up because it's profitable for certain individuals. But is that good for the public? Is that good for you or me to not have a hospital or a centers for prevention of, you know, diseases? You know, like, I forget what the CDC stands for, but it's basically to offset counters and measures like the coronavirus. And they actually knew about the coronavirus. And I think they even actually told the president about the coronavirus. And I think that he didn't care. And I think that's part of what I'm getting at, is that I think a lot of people don't think about the drastic big picture. I think a lot of people are, as I said before, they're in their own mind and they only care about what they want to care about. And they don't care about little kids in cages. They don't care that that little girl is getting raped. You know, they don't care about other people if those other people don't matter to them. And it is that fundamental. It is that basic. It is that human. I can say this a whole lot of different ways, but there's some form of ugliness to that. You know, how can you not care about people yet care about certain things that you say that you're righteous or whatever, you know, greater than thou? You know, I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous what I think the media does to people. I think it's ridiculous to not be able to understand and realize what, you know, you're doing to yourself. You know, especially when you follow people like that, that make light of, I guess, even the inequality. So, you know, we're all in this thing to, you know, in essentially, you know, be united, right? You know, like the United States of America, it's this big idea that, you know, we are bigger than just ourselves. JFK, you know, had a speech one time where he said that, you know, don't really ask what the country can do for you, right? Because, I mean, again, we can flip that back into like the whole socialist argument that, you know, I don't really want to have because I think it's ridiculous. What can you do for the country that you live in? Because that's really what it is. We are the people. We are working to make this thing a good place. And if we don't do that individually together for the greater good of the whole, then there is no country. You know, and how can you have everybody on board if everybody is freaking fighting? And I think that that's how it's always been, until somehow it's just gotten more and more and more obvious that the people that are controlling these things are dividing us for a particular and specific reason, and they have the power to do it. I know a lot of people think that it sounds far-fetched, but I mean, those are probably the people that look at the news the most. Those are the people that actually buy into the border wall and you know, rapists coming from across the border. Demographic changes are gonna make the country not American anymore. You know, these ideas are just, in my opinion, ridiculous. And you know, I think it really keeps you down. I think that it keeps everybody down with us fighting over crumbs. There are $22 trillion in the country. There's more than enough for everybody to actually do a lot better than what they're doing right now if they would just open their eyes and stop fighting over the crumbs and say, hey, let these guys pay their fair share of taxes. Let these guys build the infrastructure. They're not going to miss any of that money, especially when the top 1% own almost 90% of all the wealth in the country. I don't think they're going to miss. They're not. It's not going to change their lifestyle if they lose, or if they were to pay. Shouldn't say lose, because they, I think that they have gotten rich on us, or the country, or the benefits of living in the country. Then, you know, maybe they should not just take from the country, but also, like I said with JFK, give back to the community, give back to the fire departments that so need it, give back to the police departments that so desperately need safe measures, training. Training is a big deal. They could actually pay for training. It's a good idea. I never really thought about it that way. But, you know, with the way that the police officers handle situations, you know, they could help pay, you know, salaries for the right police officers that understand how to handle the situations that they're in. Pay the teachers to teach our children. You know, those teachers go through a lot. And a lot of them may not think that it's worth it. So they go find other jobs after a couple of years. They don't want to do it anymore because what they're exposed to, or it's just not worth it because of the amount of hours they work, or because of the demands that are needed, or because they just don't make enough money, but they would do it if they made a little bit more, even though it's really hard. I don't know the answers, but... We have a lot of smart people in the country. We have a lot of educated people in the country. We have think tanks in the country. We could make it work. Hell, look at Bernie Sanders. He's a smart old whippersnapper. And I mean that. I'm not just, you know, pushing the guy because I like him. He's a smart dude. There is nothing you can throw at him that he cannot answer. Shut you down in an argument, get out of, and actually make it sound good. If you understood what he said, if you did the research, if you knew about FDR, if you knew about the success FDR had, if you knew about the history, people were calling FDR socialists as well. I think people are just too scared to lose their crumbs. They're too scared of change. You old people, man. You can't be that old when, you know, you got to change your underwears every once in a while, man. I'm serious. You know, you can't wear them motherfuckers every day. You have to change those underwears. You have to stop being so comfortable with this dirty ass Congress that we have right now. This dirty ass president that we have. These dirty ass underwears. That's what they are. They're a bunch of bullshit. They are shit. They are bought. They are pandered. They are lobbied. They are sold out. There ain't no clean water. There's fucking oil running through all the grounds, and they want to do more. You know, we're locking up little babies, kids, molestation, rape, subjecting them, tormenting them to drugs, prostitution. We're robbing their resources or having other people do it for us in their countries, and then we wonder why they can't make it in their country, because we fucked off their countries, or the U.S. has fucked off their countries through other dictatorships and other rulers, coups that we've implemented, instigated, enacted, and paid for in Latin America, South American countries. There's a certain, what do you call it? There's a certain confidence that Bernie has. Like, I was reading about it in an article, and it was talking about the way that communicators, when they're, let's say, for instance, you're not trustworthy. Body language. You know what? I think I'm going to go ahead and read it just because I know it's a good article. I can just feel it. The definitive guide to Bernie's hand gestures by Karen Heller. Bernie Sanders has a point and a baton conducting to the beat of his rhetoric. He has a basketball palm and a robust set of jazzercise hands. The senator from Vermont and presidential candidate pinches, pecks, pushes, wags overhead and outward, his arms constantly in flight. He may lag in delegates behind Joe Biden, the more physically composed former vice president, but he's winning in body language. What he's communicating is dominance. These big gestures make politicians appear larger, says the University of Arkansas political science professor Patrick Stewart, who studies body language and leaders. It's man spreading with his hands. People who do use their hands a lot are more emotionally evocative. Stewart says they're able to communicate more. Sanders is armed literally with a second powerful form of reaching voters, seated momentarily silent or clutching a speech and microphone. His hands rarely stop talking. He is the great gesticulator. Here's a manual of Sanders' 6 favorite gestures and what each suggests. The rapid fire finger pointing. How will you convince voters that a democratic socialist can do better than a President Trump with the economy? The point is his favorite, like a go-to fleece vest. Though he's an icon of the left, the senator favors his right hand. His point is a moving target, waving, dancing towards the heavens, the exits, his exultant base, the gesture of his that's most mimicked in Larry Davidson's spot-on Saturday Night Live impersonation. Bernie is literally making a point by doing this, says Donna Van Natten, author of a book on political body language. It can be pretty positive as long as it's not pointed at someone. Left-wing groups supporting Sanders intensify their efforts as Biden surges, by Michelle Yee, He Lee, and Anu. I'm not sure what that means, but anyways. As long as it's not pointed at someone. Sanders' effusive body language is very authentic. There's nothing fake here with these expansive behaviors. He's speaking from the heart, says body language authority Joe Navarro. And the insistent point conveys how he feels about social inequality and our political system, Stewart says. What he's communicating is anger. These gestures and often choppy motions. So they're basically just getting to, you know, his body. He has a lot of body language. And before they go ahead and talk about it in detail, you know, each particular body language, they're just basically saying that, you know, he has a certain confidence about him, you know, and that's how you could tell that, you know, he knows he's winning. He is able to convey that just through his communication. You know, he's able to do it with a certain confidence that gives him the ability to show his behavior, you know, through his body language, you know. And I think that a lot of people realize that, and a lot of people know that, and it's just one of those things that I don't know. I mean, I just couldn't, I can't tell you, you know, how somebody looks with body language that's positive versus somebody that doesn't. And body language actually is really positive for Bernie Sanders. He also has the, let's see here. Sanders, or the basketball palm. Sanders is prone to extending his arms out or overhead and holding out his open hand as if palming a ball, a gesture that makes him appear larger, taller, and athletic. Vital messaging when you're 78 years old and one of the oldest individuals ever to run for president and the victim of a recent heart attack. Outstretched fingers suggest I have nothing to hide, something we like to see, Van Natten says. The conductor's baton. The question, how will you convince voters that a democratic socialist... Oh, that's one of the ones I always ask him. The conductor's baton. This is one of his moves. Sanders is the leader of his own orchestra. He controls the beat, his hands conducting from overhead down to his waist, then out of the sides. When the baton reaches with the point the person is making, Stewart says, then it's an exceptional rhetorical tool, the baton says. Pay attention to me, follow along, and the gesture can own the room. What we're looking for in messaging as is the emphasis is still there. Does he have the energy and drive? Navarro says. For a guy who's had a heart attack, he does remarkably well. The baton keeps him in charge, even on a debate stage, among other candidates, Stewart says. Essentially, he's conducting the audience. The pinch. Sanders' gestures appear visceral, unfiltered, the opposite of scripted. And said to accompany his cumulus hair. Most likely it's cultural, learned in his Brooklyn child home and community where he's gesticulating was common and imitated. He terminates many gestures with a pinch, pressing his fingers to his thumb to signal the end of his statement. It conveys a precision, a control to finish, a movement that often seems less so, and the pinch is his piquant coda, as though he's adding a dash of salt to flavor the message. The hands are talking, yelling, taking the audience on a wild emotional ride. The pinch is here to stay. We are done. I have spoken, at least for this moment. So, you know, it doesn't really take a whole lot to just understand that, you know, Bernie, I don't know, he's authentic, you know. He's got a lot of good qualities, a lot of leadership traits that, I mean, I think that if you start looking at Biden and, you know, what he's doing, yeah, they're both old. But man, mentally, physically, coherently, Sanders is he's a beast. I think that, you know, if they do have a debate, you know, you're going to see, sadly, Sanders tear Joe Biden up. And I'm kind of asking myself, why hasn't this shit already happened, right? And here we are with the coronavirus. Anyways, he's got this other thing called the big half circles. Sanders' big hands often travel in half circles, upward, outward, and to the side at his waist and hips. The circles mark more territory and suggest openness and inclusion, but are rarely completed. Leaders usually have gestures that are broader and higher than non-leaders. We expect them to have broad gestures, Navarro says, as they're communicating to large crowds, not individuals, but we usually want them to be more controlled than Sanders' movements, Navarro says. You never coach anyone to talk like this. We want to see some broad gestures that are smooth, but smooth is not how Sanders rolls or gestures. The hands that dance away from his body, his hand flutters away from side to waist. Again, he eats space. They're less ballot than stomp. This is a grassroots kind of guy. I don't have to be reserved, Van Natten says. I think it has to do with his activism. You show it through your body. It's sort of gymnastic physical display that may not be tolerated in younger candidates and people of color trying to appeal to a wide base. Consider the corporeal calm and control former President Barack Obama exhibits, the polar opposite of Sanders, Van Natten says. God forbid a woman behaves like this. Holy moly. Sanders and President Trump both speak volume, if not libraries, with their bodies. Sanders does it most exclusively with his hands. Their messaging is clear and timely, Stewart says. Working in crowded debates and with vexed electorate, they're communicating that they're bigger than life. So cool. Yeah, that's the end of the article. I think that Karen Heller by the Washington Post, you know, just recently put this out. As I mean, it's out right now. And it's a brand new article. And but today is Sunday. The what is today? March the 15th. 2 days before St. Patrick's Day. Anyways, I think I'm going to go ahead and close this article. I just kind of wanted to talk about, you know, the coronavirus a little bit, how we're responding to it, how I think we can be in better hands. If this had been a bigger disaster, it could have caused a lot of deaths. And I think that people are being really bad judgments of, you know, the political, letting this political thing get away from us. You know, young people need to start voting more. People need to start voting more altogether. And, you know, I think that that's a good opportunity for African Americans. It's also a good opportunity for Chicanos, Indigenous people throughout the whole country, the whole hemisphere. Indigenous people need to start voting. Right now, I think, is the time to test the government. You know, they've always been wrong to us. They've always treated us with disdain. They've always just stolen everything from us and limited our voice. Well, we're in a different day and a different time period. So now, if everything is true that everybody says is true, then, you know, we should be able to get some freedom by voting democratically. Democracy was built here. And democracy is an idea that originated here. It didn't come from anywhere else. That's a strong thought. Look it up. Investigate it. May have you take some pride in where democracy came from. In particular, Ben Franklin did not invent democracy. He looked towards the First Nations people to basically take that idea discover when you discover something. I'm gonna discover your wife. It's a joke. Anyways, yeah, man, appreciate you guys tuning in. I guess I'll catch you on the next episode, and peace out.